Good evening. You're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain in Bella Vista. And this is Jim Dowling. I'll be your host tonight on Right Stuff. I think you're going to find it really interesting. I have a great guest, Celeste White, who just happens to be an old friend and neighbor of mine. Thanks for coming in, Celeste.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let me just let those folks out there know a little bit about Celeste from some biographical information, then we'll get to the show. She's born in Kansas City, Missouri, author of kids' books, The Legend of the Flying Hot Dog, which was optioned for film by the animation director for Beavis and Butthead Do America. Ooh. Co-publisher of the Hot Air Quarterly. I hope we get a chance to talk about that a little more. Author of 4 novels and 2 memoirs, all available on Amazon. The hardcover edition of The Last Good Fairy, recipient of the New England Book Award for Excellence in Book Design, featured 4 pieces of found art that were hidden in different parts of the country. Images of art were composed in end leaves, and a bookmark gave clues on where to search for the art. So far, 3 have been found. 1 is still out there. Yeah, work as an editor and ghostwriter, has a master's degree in biology, specializing in epigenetics. Say that 10 times real quickly. How genes are expressed, in other words. Also, work as an artist, having displayed her work in Turtle Bay, North Valley Art League, City Hall, Shasta Arts Council, and Main Street Gallery. And also worked as art director for Hill Country Health and Wellness Center. So Celeste is a busy person. She does a lot of neat stuff, and my wife and I feel so fortunate to have Celeste and Richard as our neighbors. So what we're going to do today is we are going to share some of the work that she's just been writing. She's been doing some short pieces on unusual encounters with people. And so, Celeste, you want to talk a little bit about the first one that we might get to here?
So the first one takes place in Amherst, Massachusetts, where Richard and I lived in the 70s. And we lived there for about 4 years and eventually got tired of the winters and moved out to California.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful, beautiful part of the country. And really, we had a great time there. And some very interesting things happened while we were there.
I would say so. Okay, well, you've got a bunch of neat stories. Let's hear this first one from the area around Amherst, right?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Back in the 70s, my husband Richard and I lived in Amherst, Massachusetts. Richard's sister Kathleen and her husband Joe lived nearby in Connecticut, and the 4 of us often spent our weekends together in one state or the other. One of our favorite activities in Massachusetts was to explore the extensive forests in Richard's and my little Toyota Corolla, which we had named Toad Williams for reasons that seemed self-explanatory at the time. Western Massachusetts is steeped in tradition, and a lot of areas have no commercial establishments whatsoever, such as coffee shops or cafes or even convenience markets. For sustenance on these trips, we often picked up some Slim Jims at our local grocery store before taking off, 4 individual baguettes, and a 6-pack of Molson's Golden. But one day we had not stocked up before we headed out, and we kept getting pulled into this area we had not explored before, dense with bewitching old-growth beeches, maples, and birches, crumbling dry stone fences, and lush undergrowth. We became hungrier and hungrier, but we just couldn't seem to make ourselves turn around. And then, in the absolute middle of nowhere, in a hoary, lichen-plastered, and moss-padded location that belonged in a previous century, we came upon a school bus parked in a clearing on the side of the road. It had a cheery red and white striped awning and a menu tacked up next to the window that was set up for taking and dispensing takeout orders. We were thrilled. The choices were simple, but the food was good. Hamburgers, grilled cheese sandwiches, baked beans and franks, some homemade pies and cupcakes for dessert. We were so charmed with this place that we kept coming back. Eventually, we made our way inside the bus, where the couple had set up a small booth and a table at one end. We would place our orders, and they would cook for us in their tiny kitchen, chatting away like we had come home for a visit. And then our exploring took us elsewhere for a while, to Vermont, New Hampshire, and other parts of Massachusetts. When we returned, we were the prodigal sons. They fussed over us, made us some special treats, told us they were worried about us, feared something had happened to us. We felt terribly guilty and resumed our former schedule. But one day, and perhaps it was after another absence, we came back and the bus was gone. Totally gone. As if it had never existed. We were not even sure we were in the right place. How could its presence have been so completely erased? Were they fairy folk? Was it a group hallucination? Had we failed in our mission to single-handedly keep their business afloat? We'll never know. But fairy folk or no, it was enchanting while it lasted.
Wow. Well, I especially like the description.
Thank you.
Hoary, lichen-covered, lichen-plastered, and moss-padded location. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thanks.
And it has a sense of real mystery to it at the end.
It did. It was so weird because we'd been there so many times, mm-hmm. so many times. And when we came back that one time and it was so completely gone with no sign that it had ever been there, it was very mysterious.
Yeah, yeah. It would be nice to figure this out.
I know. I wish we could track those people down and find out what happened.
You know, there's something that runs through a lot of your writing, I believe, anyway. I'm thinking of The Listener that you wrote for Hot Air Quarterly a while back, and this sense of mystery and not knowing everything, you know, it's a big part of your writing. Anyway, we'll move on, but it's a beautiful story.
Thank you.
And I love the description. And was it group hallucination? That's interesting, too. So what were they serving there?
Yeah, really.
Okay. So what did you want to read next?
I'll read The Encounter on Iron Mountain Road.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
One early autumn evening, I was driving into town, late for an appointment. I live outside of town a few miles along a curvy road that I know by heart. I know it so well, I know exactly how fast I can take each curve without losing control, and this evening, I was pushing it. Back then, there wasn't much traffic along this road, and even fewer pedestrians. In fact, hardly any pedestrians walked along it at all. This thought popped into my mind as I downshifted to better hug one of the twisty turns, and then a counter-thought intruded. If anyone was walking this road, with its slim, practically non-existent shoulder, I'd be on top of them before I could slow down. As I rounded the next curve, I had just started to ease off on the accelerator when I spied a couple walking in the road with their backs to the traffic. I slammed on the brakes so hard, smoke poured from my wheels. I practically broke the brake pedal off in my urgency. But it was too late. I couldn't stop in time. Oddly, however, I felt no impact. None at all. I came to a shaky stop, trembling so hard my teeth were chattering. I looked wildly around for the bodies I was sure had to be lying on the side of the road, but there was nothing. No one. It was a mirage or a hallucination or something. As I started up again, not wanting to get rear-ended by someone driving like I had been, I slowed down. A lot. So that when I rounded the next bend, and there they were, a couple walking in the road with their backs to the traffic, I was driving slowly enough that I avoided them with no problem. So just what did I see? Was it a mirage or a hallucination or a mysterious and providential warning?
Well, is that Iron Mountain Road by any chance?
That is Iron Mountain Road.
Yeah, I've had some close encounters out there, too, people wandering at night. But this is really different. You have any theories about this?
You know, it's really hard to figure out. There are theories that we all share, you know, a collective consciousness on this mm-hmm. planet. And there's a writer called Larry Dossey. I love him. He's a medical doctor.
Sure.
And he writes about things like telepathy and premonitions things like that. And he calls it the one mind, that often there are ways to access information not through the usual methods.
Sure.
And he says that often telepathic communication happens during emergency situations, when there is danger at hand, when a life is at stake.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wonder if I didn't want to hit these people. And despite their behavior, they didn't want to get run into. And that somehow I just picked up on their presence.
Yeah.
And it manifested as an image, or a mirage, or whatever. But it was so shocking.
Yeah, the first encounter, the one that wasn't real, had you slamming on your brakes.
I mean, they didn't look like ghosts or anything. They looked like solid three-dimensional people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I slammed on my brakes. And it's just, it kind of defies, explanation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to say, I love things like that.
Well, I think everybody listening, everybody out there has witnessed weird coincidences.
Yes.
I wish I had written them all down. There have been some strange ones over the years. Mm-hmm. The most common that people cite is, well, I knew who was calling and I hadn't heard from that person for 4.5 years, that sort of thing. I think we all share that. There must be another dimension to our consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. That's another show. I'll have to start something besides write stuff.
Right.
But great story. Really liked it.
You've
got some other gems here. Let's get on to another one.
Thank you. Do you have a preference?
Well, I'm going to try to get them all in here.
Okay.
So, driving home to Redding from San Diego. That's
yes.
a beauty.
Okay. A number of years ago, Richard and I were driving home to Redding from San Diego, where my brother used to live. One of the most daunting aspects of the 12-hour drive was the 2 hours or more through Los Angeles. We tried to time going through there at the most auspicious time, but there often isn't an auspicious time. Given the time suck involved in the traffic and the complexity of the freeway system, we try to pay close attention to our route so that we don't end up bamboozled. But this day, the freeway system was undergoing some significant repairs and I-5 was heavily involved. Some lanes were changed during the work and some signage got taken down. Before we knew it, we were headed out to Antelope Valley. Rather than go back and try to get back on I-5 at the same location where we got shunted, we decided simply to pull out our pre-GPS Thomas Brothers guide and head west, then pick up I-5 farther north. However, the density of development between Highway 14 and I-5 was considerable, and there was a rail line involved in there somewhere that hampered our bird dogging. Finally, hopelessly lost and frustrated that we were spending so much time trying to get back on the highway, we stopped for gas and decided to ask for directions. Richard went inside to ask while I stayed with the car to finish pumping the gas. I noticed a super cute and friendly-looking guy with a head full of stubby dreads on the other side of the pump. I caught his eye, and he smiled and nodded. "Hey, can you tell me how to get to I-5 from here?" I asked. He nodded enthusiastically and proceeded to give me detailed and complex directions. Before he was finished, Richard came out and stood next to me while the guy finished up his recitation. "Hey, thanks," I said. "Thanks a lot." He grinned at me and thumped his heart twice with his fist. It was seriously adorable. "Did you get that?" I asked Richard as we got in the car. It seemed a little complicated. Richard didn't reply for a moment, and then he shot a glance at me and said, "Celeste," he was driving a shopping cart. Oh, well, okay, his directions were probably shit, but he was so friendly and so eager to help, and honestly, that little thump on the heart he gave us made my day. In fact, I obviously still remember it. And the way that memory makes me smile every time makes it infinitely more valuable than a set of correct directions.
All right. Beautiful story.
Thank you.
Yeah. A little tender slice of humanity. Is there a lesson here about people, do you think?
Well, you know, I think probably if I'd seen the shopping cart, I probably wouldn't have asked for directions. But I do think, honestly, homeless people get ignored and short shrift and often dehumanized.
Sure.
And the thing is, you couldn't have told this guy was homeless just from looking at him. You know, it was the shopping cart that gave him away.
Right.
And he was so lovely. I mean, he was really lovely.
I mean, it's a beautiful story. And there is, you know, to me, it's sometimes when we have these encounters and we don't read all the signs right, we can't stereotype. We have a genuine connection.
Yes.
You know, and that's, to me, that's the beauty of this story. It's like, this guy had probably not encountered a lot of people who took him seriously.
Probably not.
And your interest probably was really exciting and honorable and refreshing. And it's a great story.
Oh,
and
thanks.
By the way, folks, if you're liking these stories, this is Celeste White, my guest on Right Stuff. And this group of stories is called Encounters with Strangers. And anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there because I don't remember if I did that earlier.
Thank you.
Okay. It's a great story. Real nice.
Thanks.
It's a feel-good story.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have another one in store for those folks out there.
These are all short. I have one extra if there's time.
There's going to be time. We'll make time.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, the one about swimming.
Yes.
That's a good story. let's hear the one about swimming.
Okay. When I was a kid, to say I was wound up would be an understatement. Not only was I perpetually engaged in high-energy activities, attempting to tightrope walk, teaching myself to skateboard on a crappy skateboard on a steep hill with buckled sidewalks, racing bikes at breakneck speed on gravel, falling on my face enough times that my dentist yanked my two front baby teeth to protect my permanent teeth when they came in. I was emotionally high-strung as well. At any rate, when I was young, I competed on a swim team. I wasn't a particularly gifted swimmer, though my backstroke wasn't bad, but I loved swimming, and it meant that I could ride my bike to practice and then spend the rest of the day at the pool during the summer diving for pennies and playing Marco Polo. Our coach was a classic drill sergeant type coach, and one thing he did not brook was tardiness. If a swimmer didn't arrive on time, they didn't get a practice that day. Not to mention, you would be the object of his withering scorn, scorn so withering it could reduce a robust aloe vera plant to a sad clump of desiccated wisps in seconds. I was terrified of him, but I also desperately wanted his approval. And despite the fact that I seemed to be in constant trouble, I desperately wanted to please in general. I just couldn't quite figure out how to do that most of the time, evidently. But one thing I knew I could get right was arrive at swim team practice on time. I had a little swim bag that I took with me for my day at the pool, a small canvas sack to carry my towel and change of clothes that closed with a drawstring made of rope with frayed ends. Two wire baskets were mounted on my bike to carry things like my swim bag, and that arrangement worked well until one fateful day. One of the things I liked about my ride to the pool was that it took me through some of Kansas City's nicest neighborhoods. And Kansas City has some of the nicest neighborhoods in the country. Along Ward Parkway, stately mansions sported beautifully landscaped, spacious grounds, grounds that required skilled and continuous upkeep. I was pedaling along, making good time when my bike screeched to a halt. I jumped off my bike and tried to figure out what was wrong, but I was a little kid. I didn't have a clue. I kept trying to get the bike to go, but it wouldn't. It was getting later and later, and I knew I was going to be tardy to practice. I started crying in my frustration. I was so upset that I didn't notice the nice older man who came up to me and asked me what was the matter. I told him, in between sobs, that my bike wouldn't go, and I was late. He inspected my bike and discovered that one of the frayed ends of the drawstring on my bag had fallen out of the basket and dangled down onto the axle of my rear wheel, wrapping itself around it until the wheel froze. He fetched his tools and patiently explained to me what had happened and how he would fix it. Then there was no need for tears. He was the gardener for one of the mansions I had ridden past. He saw a small child in distress and took time away from his work to help me. Despite my daredevil qualities, I was quite shy, so I could hardly look at him while he fixed my wheel. I thanked him in a whisper when he smiled at me and told me I was good to go. I hopped on my bike and made it to swim team practice with barely a minute to spare. Every day after that, when I rode past the gorgeously kept gardens under this man's devoted care, I would look for him. When I saw him, I gave him the biggest wave I could muster without falling off my bike. And the wave and smile that he returned filled me with so much elation that even if I competed ignominiously against my more gifted teammates for inclusion in the upcoming swim meets, or I earned my coach's contempt for failing to figure out how to do a flip turn, I just had to remember this kind man's smile. And that helped me to sail through the rest of the day.
Yeah. Sounds like he had a rich childhood.
Yes.
In Kansas City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a great place to be a kid. It really was. And, you know, back then, as you probably experienced yourself, kids were just let loose for the whole day. You know, I mean,
the good old days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go, you know, I'll be home at dinner time, Mom.
Exactly. Right. I mean, I don't know how old I was. I can't remember, but I was probably like 7. You know,
yeah.
Something like that. You know, maybe 8. But yeah. And there was kind of a similar theme to this story and the one that I read about the homeless man. Just,
yes.
You know, kindness that you encounter from strangers.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what an impression it can make. Even though it's just usually one time.
And it's mutual.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
You meant a lot to that guy, too. He got to help you out.
Yes.
And here's that beautiful young child waving at me every day.
Yes, all happy.
All happy. And I think we all like that experience. Yeah, nice story.
Thank you.
Let's talk just a little bit about your family. What did, you know, if you don't mind.
No.
Because I've heard some of these at dinner parties and stuff like that. But tell us a little bit about your family, because you do have an interesting family.
So my mother was the youngest of 14 children. And so I had, 26 aunts and uncles on that side.
Wow.
Many of them living in Kansas City. Her father was a politician. He was a state senator, and he was Secretary of State of Missouri. My dad was from a smaller family, and that family, my grandmother was very involved in the Kansas City cultural scene. So she was always taking us to the symphony or the ballet or the opera or the Nelson Atkins Art Museum, which is amazing. And my dad had a freak accident when I was 5.
Oh, that's right.
And he broke his back and he ended up in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. But he was amazing. He didn't let him slow him down one iota. My mom and my dad had a small business. They sold window treatments and carpets and rugs and wholesale and to interior designers and things like that. And they made a big success of the business.
Well, they did an incredible job of raising kids, too.
Oh, okay.
Give us a thumbnail sketch of what your siblings have done and are doing.
So I have 2 sisters and a brother. My brother, sadly, died a few years ago. My oldest sister was a half-sister, and she didn't grow up with us. But she would come visit. She grew up in Wichita, and she would come visit. I just adored her because she had this delightful sense of humor. She was very fun, very playful, very silly. And she grew up to be an extremely gifted portrait painter.
Ah, yes.
And she worked like 19 years on this project where she chronicled the lives of working cowgirls.
Yeah. Well, you can give her a plug if you want to.
Oh, yeah.
I've got one of her prints.
Yes. Tough by Nature.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the book is still available. It might be. But it's her magnificent portraits of these amazing women.
And doesn't Maya Angelou have a part in that?
I think she wrote the foreword.
Yeah.
And Sandra Day O'Connor wrote like an introduction.
And your brother who passed away, he did some amazing things.
He was a very gifted mathematician.
Yes.
And in fact, at one point he was shortlisted for a Nobel Prize in economics.
Yep.
And he taught, he had a chair at the University of California at San Diego.
Yeah.
He was inducted into the, what is that? Oh, now I'm blanking on it. But it was a very prestigious honor that's given to people that make contributions in their fields that are outstanding.
Well, I'm trying to carve out. We have just enough time for one more story. But then you've got a sister in England.
And she is a harpist. She's a professional harpist. She has played with the BBC Recording Orchestra. She's played with the London Symphony.
Yep.
She teaches at the Royal Academy.
Mm-hmm.
She got her master's degree from Juilliard.
Yeah.
Taught there for a while. So,
I'm not going to talk about my family.
Oh.
Let's get to that last story here.
Okay.
I've never heard it, so this is going to be a real treat for me.
So the others were encounters with strangers. And this is a little bit off that track, but depending upon your definition of strangers, it can fit into the same category. After I graduated from college and married my husband Richard, we spent the better part of a year in his hometown, Little Rock, where he was attending the university. I was working a stressful and thankless job in the teaching hospital taking and analyzing blood gases. They were obtained by puncturing the substantial nerve sheath that protects the arteries, and I was on call every other night and every other weekend. Richard was taking a full course load and working two part-time jobs. So whenever we got the chance, we jumped in our Toyota Corolla and burrowed as deeply into the magical mountains and forests of North Arkansas as we could. One afternoon, we drove to the Ouachitas, lush with dense fay forest, pine, oak, and hickory. These mountains are ancient, from the Paleozoic era, and they feel that way. We took the hike during the early fall, and the temperature was perfect. Some of the leaves were starting to turn, some even to fall, and they spiced the air with a delicious, musty scent. We were having such a good time wandering along the trail that it got later than we had planned on, and we found ourselves having to return to Toad Williams in the dark. Fortunately, it was full moon, so once the sun set, the moon rose. It was bright, too, gilding all the branches with silver light, but not so bright that we could follow our route back to the car. After a while, when we were keenly aware that we should have been back at the trailhead by now, we sat down to discuss our options. It was warm enough that we wouldn't freeze to death if we slept in the forest, but it was not going to be very comfortable, and we hadn't brought any food with us. On the other hand, it seemed foolish to keep getting more and more lost so that we wouldn't be able to find our way even when it became light. While we were sitting there, out of nowhere, a small black dog appeared. She was a mix of some kind that probably included hound dog, and quite obviously a she, as several swollen teats covered her tummy. She snuggled up to us for a little bit and joined the pats we gave her, and then she trotted over to the trail we'd been on. She stopped and looked back at us expectantly, as though she wanted us to follow her. Not knowing what else to do, we did just that. She ambled along beside us, exuding the most reassuring presence imaginable. We had no idea who this dog was or where she came from, but we trusted her. And before too very long, we were back on the trail to our car at a place that we recognized. We petted the dog and thanked her, then headed on our way. I looked back at one point to see if she was still there, but she had vanished, no doubt to return to her puppies. But we had to wonder, how did she know we were lost? And how did she know where we needed to go? She smelled our scent, no doubt, but we've never been able to explain why she showed up, when and where she did, and why she decided to help us. But it remains one of the most bewitching nights Richard and I have ever experienced.
Yeah, beautiful story.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for bringing them in, and thank you so much for being my guest, Celeste.
Well, this has been fun. This has been great.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Maybe keep writing, and we'll do this again sometime.
Okay, sure. I'm having fun with these little vignettes.
Yes, you are. Okay, folks, I guess that's going to have to be it for the evening. This is KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain and Bella Vista. Take care and good evening.